Welcome to Axon Archives, Uprise, the highest-rated Beast Wars podcast on Apple Podcasts, where we watch every episode of the 90s CG cartoon Beast Wars. I'm Daoud.
I'm James.
And this episode, we're going to start off with Beast Wars Uprising. We're mainly covering the prose stories. There was a comic which, outside of the Collector's Club magazine, is really the first time we see the actual Beast Wars Uprising timeline. We'll get to that in a second. So it's actually been a few weeks since we recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The main caveat of this timeline is that after the Great War, I believe I actually found out that about 2 years after the Great War ended, the Human Confederacy, the humans actually became more technologically advanced than the Cybertronians and basically told them, like, you guys are kind of just destroying everything around you. We're going to limit you to one planet. You're not allowed to leave Cybertron.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a much darker Transformers timeline as it'll become more apparent as we describe it.
Yeah, it takes place in the 24th century, which is why there's a lot of... Which I didn't realize this before, but... It's when the Next Generation era of Star Trek takes place. That's probably why a lot of the writers had Star Trek references in mind.
Yeah. Jim Thorson is to put it lightly, a huge nerd. There's all sorts of references. There's all sorts of, like, deep cut character references with names, and even, like, some GoBots show up in here. It's kind of wild.
Yep. But also I meant during Beast Wars proper also.
Oh yeah.
Because they're from the 24th century.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This was a series of prose stories. Were they published on the website or the magazine for Transformers Collectors?
I think they were published in the magazine originally and then also published on the website.
Okay.
Because there was a Transformers Collectors Club magazine as well. I remember my brother got issues of that.
Okay. Yeah, so this was published from February 19th, 2015 to December 28th, 2016. I'm going off the published date of the epilogue.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Jim Sorensen, as we mentioned a second ago, and David Bishop. Art was done by Jesse Wittenrick, William Mangan, Josh Burcham, Hosono Tomoya, Christopher Colgan, Dan Perico, and Robbie Musto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just there's with different stories they have different like illustrations inserted in them, so it's not like they worked on them all at once.
Yeah, imagine the writers probably switched off main duties every story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the Autobots and the Decepticons created because they're limited to only Cybertron. They're sort of starving for fuel because they're using it all. So they created proxy armies, the Maximals and Predacons. Decepticons again.
Mm-hmm.
They started off as proxy armies. Eventually, they sort of created a new status quo in the sense that because the Autobots and Decepticons don't have enough energon to actually even move, let alone transform, they had to create these more smaller, more fuel efficient second generation Cybertronians.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they just sort of settled into a status quo of the originals becoming what known as the builders of Cybertron, and the new gen sort of becoming a second class. They actually mine all the energon, and everyone on the planet actually has to ration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much all the Maximals and Predacons live in slums. Originally, the concept for this was Beast Wars meets the Hunger Games. Jim Sorensen wasn't too keen on that idea, but the Ferguson riots were happening about the same time, and he sort of took inspiration from that.
Yeah, this is why the title of all the prose stories are references to psychiatry-related social phenomena. So when we say that there's an episode called Trigger Warnings, it's not in the annoying, ironic, like, the annoying internet way where people say that, like, just to, like, like, oh, trigger warning. Like, no, like, he's actually referring to the psychiatric phenomenon. He's not, so he's using it in the actual sense.
Yeah, which I always get mad at people who, like, scoff and someone else says trigger warning. I'm like, you do realize there are people who actually have trauma and they're worried about triggering that trauma, right?
Oh, absolutely. I have some coworkers who make fun of trigger words, even though they were in the military and presumably know some people with PTSD.
Yeah. We'll actually be talking about a character who has PTSD during one of these stories.
The phenomenon generally does relate to the subject matter as well.
Yes. Yeah. The trigger warnings one actually is a crime noir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a max cop has to solve a murder, but there's also what was the other thing? I had to talk about the Triangle Shirt Factory fire, which, if you guys know about that, is a huge reason why labor movement in the early 20th century was a thing. But there was a lot of people died in that fire. So before I talked about it to my class, I said, like, just trigger warning right here. There's going to be a fire. A lot of people died. I'm letting you know right now. I got a few eye rolls. I'm like, there's people who family might have died in a fire. I'm trying to be sensitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's, I guess that's a good point to start. So in addition to maintaining most of the essential functions of the society, they also provide entertainment and continue the Autobot-Decepticon grudge gladiatorial matches. However, the Transformer homeworld descends into war as Lyo Convoy leads many Maximals and Predacons against the status quo for their freedom, launching the Grand Uprising. The resistance, which Lyo Convoy joins and sort of just takes leadership of, was actually started by Cheetor.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that was actually mentioned or not. It wasn't mentioned in the one story we were able to actually read all the way through.
No,
these we kind of had to use the wiki.
Yeah, because there is a lot. Because, like, while they're for free, it is a lot. Like, this is all very tense and honestly very, like, pretty good from everything I've looked at. Stuff that, like, I think on a couple times when we've done character spotlights, I think we kind of brushed over it and we said, like, oh, this uprising story happened, but didn't really have a time to summarize it. And I'm just like, oh, I guess I probably shouldn't have skipped over it that much.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, each story actually focuses on a different character, so I imagine for most of those uprising entries, they weren't very involved.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe on one story. Do you listen to Bed Bath & Bionicle?
I do not, but okay. I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, so anyone who doesn't listen to it, our internet friend Riley Hopkins basically takes a half hour at 7 in the morning to explain to his friend Joe about Bionicle. So I just recently found it because of DigiMondays, and then he mentioned Bed Bath & Bionicle. I'm like, Riley, are you trying to just take up all of my internet nostalgia that Jake hasn't already taken up? But yeah, so Riley uses the Bionicle Wiki as a source for a lot of his things, and there actually are prose children's or I guess young adult books to go along with all the lore. I tried to read those at one point. They're not very long. They are thick, though. And that's kind of what we encountered here with Beast Wars Uprising.
Mm-hmm.
I just needed to plug that podcast I just started. Also, go listen to DigiMondays. Like, I've only listened to one episode so far, but I got it. Digimon Tamers is something that was pretty close to my heart growing up. And I, of course, am yelling at Riley through my phone every time he says something wrong. Mm-hmm. For one, it's Angemon, not Angemon.
That's so close to being like Angemon, which I'm just imagining like a Digimon that's a protractor.
I was imagining a trapezoid.
That's good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, dude. It's Angemon. He's a freaking angel.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, let's back to Transformers. So, yeah. The first story we're going to talk about is Broken Windshield.
Mm-hmm.
So this is basically a Lao Convoy talking, realize that he is sort of the referee of these gladiatorial games, and actually does, it's his job to make sure the body count stays equal on both sides, like as it goes.
Yeah, and keep the games relatively close. He has a, staff. Oh no, we didn't write that down.
Oh no.
He has a staff that essentially, Sophilism, if I remember correctly.
Something like that, yeah, I'll look up the actual name.
Yeah, which allows him to, essentially renders him invisible to most Transformers, so that he can just go throughout the battlefield, can't get caught in view by the cameras, doesn't get seen by the competitors, so that way he can interfere without it being obvious that he's doing so. And and after viewing the most recent game, he gets called into his office by his builder leader, the Autobot Eject.
Yeah.
Is it Eject or Rewind?
I'm pretty sure it's Eject.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's Solipsistic Staff. Although now I look at the actual entry, it says also known as the Typhoon Staff. Here's what we're gonna call it.
I mean, Solipsistic makes more sense. We're gonna hopefully we'll not have to keep referring to it by name.
Yeah. We talked about this in the episode that before. At one point, we were planning to talk about these one by one. Before I realized that's an entire season of our show.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to remind everyone?
If we ever do a Patreon, maybe we'll add it for a goal for like bonus episodes. But like, otherwise, like it would be about half as long as it would take for us to do these machines, you know, the actual show we were planning on getting to.
Yeah, that's 13 episodes. That's equal to season 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Each, not combined. Yeah, do you want to remind everybody what Solipsistic means? Like, I think you had the last name right?
I did. I don't have it up right now.
Okay.
I'll look up that definition. Thank you, iPad.
Okay, so the viewer theory that the self is all that can be known to exist. Oh, that's ironic, because like holding the staff basically makes him non-existent to all cameras on Cybertron.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the story that is not very subtle, but it works.
I mean, like, I guarantee you, like, 90% of the people reading this story were not going to look that the word up. I didn't know it had a meaning. I thought it was just, they just put a bunch of letters together.
Anyways, so he meets up with Eject, who tells them that they're planning to do a cull, which is when they call in previous champions who have won the game and thus are immune from it, but then the cull, you call them all back. Again, very Hunger Games. In fact, Eject even mentions that they stole the idea from humans, from television broadcasts. Lyle Convoy is not very happy with this, and he ends up tracking down a falling star and meeting a new Maximal who has not been, which we'll eventually find out, Black Arachnia, who is like does not like him since he seems to be a lackey of the builders.
He calls him Patsy Prime.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So he, like, she kind of gets it in his head. He's sort of just sitting around for a while because he can't get his mind to shut up, and he just filled with self-doubt. So he kind of goes out looking for a fight. He knocks out two Maximal Security Force officers, and just sort of runs, hoping to find Black Ranking again.
Yeah, specifically ones that are harassing a Maximal on the street, essentially for like making up charges or like staring too long. And he thinks that he should just, you know, shut up and not interfere, but he doesn't feel like it this time and beats the crap out of them.
Yeah, he beats the crap out of him. Heads back to the place he left Black Rackia, hoping she'd be there still. At least can't find her, but she finds him. Oh, one interesting detail actually about that was that when he's sort of just unable to calm his mind when he's in his apartment, you want to call it an apartment, more like a tenement, but he can sort of like self-heal by meditating. He can kind of direct the nanobots in his system towards specific repairs, which his doctor said that's impossible. But we'll find out why for him it might not be impossible. He sort of calls Eject up and tells him he's sorry. He isn't. He kind of just snaps. Eject is willing to take him back and lets him be the agent of order, something of order. Again, it's next.
Is there music playing?
Hmm?
Oh no, sorry. I had a video in a tab that started playing, and I'm just like, wait, is that sound? Okay. We can cut that part out, but I was like, it's just like, crap, is that sound coming through on the vid, on the audio?
No, not on my end, so we're okay.
Probably not on my end either.
Yeah, if it is, luckily you weren't talking, which, good practice. So he is, but he waits for the opportune moment. I'm skipping a very big detail part. When Black Rackia finds him, along with some resistance buddies of hers. One thing that actually had happened to him in that fight is the windshields on his chest were broken, and he repaired that. And she says, like, something, I was actually planning to go to Earth, something knocked me off course, my transwarp shunt, and pulled me back to Cybertron. It was some energy source. And then she punches him in the chest again, breaking his windshield. Mm-hmm. And reveals that this is why I'm here. We don't find out what it is until the next scene. When he's back at the games, you have some stand-ins for the main Beast Warrior cast that we see in the show. And then at the right moment, he reveals himself. He uses his staff to basically cripple all the Maximals and Predacons within the war in the stadium. The rest of the Resistance sort of take over the what do you call that room? The control room.
Yeah,
they take over the control room from the Builder, who's actually an Autobot. And he reveals that the reason why he was given such a high position for a Maximal is because he houses the Matrix of Creation, the thing that allowed the Builders to create Maximals and Predacons. Once there was enough of them, they needed to hide it somewhere. They announce the grand uprising. Once he's revealed everything, he, of course, there is outrage, there's riots and stuff. That's kind of where the first part ends.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we think these are mostly in order. Like, a lot of these, well, some of these, like, most of these take place chronologically after the story, though, one exception, which I'll mention when we get there.
So, Head Games.
Mm.
That one's yours, right?
No. That was one you wrote.
Oh, okay. I thought we were switching off every
Oh, day. I mean, I could read that. I'll read the thing, but, like, I didn't get a chance to read all the description.
Oh, yeah, no, I read the synopsis. I can do that one. Alright, so, in Head Games, the Resistance tries to infiltrate Fortress Maximus in an effort to free political prisoners. Cerebros messes with Buzzclaw's mind to get him to act as Maximus' agent. Which successfully worked. But Cybershark kills Buzzclaw and forcibly retrieves the coordinates to... Oh, what just happened?
Mm-hmm.
My screen went black for a second. Oh, sorry.
No, that's alright.
That was weird. I got so scared. Cybershark kills Buzzclaw and forcibly retrieves the coordinates to the control room because... Fortress Maximus is supposed to be a living prison. And his inside sort of changed to keep people confused.
Ooh. Yeah, that's gotta be kind of horrifying, since the whole idea is, like, the Builder is, like, the Gen 1 Transformers that yet are, like, too weak to have power. The idea of, like, a city former who, like, has barely enough, who doesn't really have enough energy to do anything is kind of horrifying, and just, like, trapped in his own body. We should mention that, like, this, since it doesn't, well, not, won't come directly, that they explicitly say that, like, all, like, a lot of the famous Gen 1 characters are, have been, like, they've died off to a screen. Like, there's no, there is no Optimus, there is no Megatron. So with a couple exceptions, you usually don't have a lot of, like, the big name Gen 1 characters. It implied, like, you know, this is part of the reason why everything has descended. Like, you no longer have, like, the heroes of the past around, and you just have the dregs kind of just, like, fighting among scraps for themselves.
That's a little too real. Now you say that loud.
Yeah, I know.
Can you explain the concept of Cerebros? Is he like a three-folded mind?
Okay, so this is one I did not read a description. So Cerebros, so I know Cerebros in classic time, in like the Gen 1 timeline, is Fortress Maximus's head, and works as a, and like turns into a computer. So in this story,
he's like three different Transformers. I guess they're working together.
Yeah, okay. So Fortress Maximus is a headmaster. Cerebros forms his head. So, but is also a separate independent end of being. And I don't know if do the other Fortress Maximus components appear in this?
Grand Plasma and Cord?
Yes, okay.
Yeah, so the impression I thought that those three were Cerebros.
Yeah. Oh, they're also okay, that explains it. Now I'm looking at Cerebros, like Plasma is Cerebros from Robots in Disguise. So I think they actually are different Cerebroses from different time, from like different Transformers lines. Yeah. Oh, and Cord is the Nebulos, who originally was Cerebros' head, because Fortress Maximus is a double headmaster. Cerebros has a headmaster, and then Cerebros forms the head. Transformers are weird.
The Transformers Marishka doll.
Yeah.
I'm using the wrong word, but I can't remember the actual word. The nesting egg, nesting dolls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so he basically brainwashes Buzzclaw. Cybershark kills Buzzclaw with some sort of silver canister, and forcibly retrieves the coordinates to the control room, so they're able to free the prisoners. One of whom is actually Titor, who has been given the title of First Resistor. Yeah. So this kind of actually plays into the motif for this and for the entire story, that while the no side is actually the good guy, they both do pretty morally questionable things. Like, they kind of imply that the resistance knew Buzzclaw was going to get brainwashed and were planning to just take him out. Oh, it should have been mentioned that Buzzclaw wasn't a member of the resistance at the beginning of this. The resistance just happened, or the Grand Uprising just started like a couple days before this story starts, and Cybershark was in the bar with him after a supposed resistance bombing, and sort of convinced him and Circuit to join.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely got that in the story. I when we get to it, when microaggressions, is definitely a lot of like. Even if you think you're doing a good thing, you're also about to commit a massive war crime.
So let's see. Head Games. I think it's kind of. We don't need to explain that title, do we?
No. We don't need to explain all the phenomena, but yeah. Obviously.
Oh, we didn't explain Broken Windshield, actually.
Yeah.
I think that one needs to be explained.
Yeah, Broken Windshields is... Man, I wish I... Which I saved my notes from, like, the last time.
You actually explained this to me last time. I didn't realize. I thought it was something you just knew. I thought you were a very smart person.
I did. I did actually look it up. But like, I did. Let's see. I didn't do that. Okay. So, but broken windshields is a criminology theory that the idea that minor, like, the condition of the neighborhood affects crime. So if you have like a building that has like broken windshields and like that encourages minor crime to escalate into major crime. So, you know, if, and also it is a policing theory. It is also a very controversial one, as you might imagine, especially if you're not white.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real.
Yeah, no, like, supposedly, people of color in America are more than half the population, but they can half the population, but can commit two-fourths of the crime. That's because, like, if you're hanging out from a police officer standpoint, if you're hanging out in that kind of a neighborhood, you're less likely to accidentally arrest the judge's nephew or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Which actually, that is the thinking behind it. Which, if your intent is to do that and, you know, actually just catch crime, I understand how you get there. It's kind of just having blinders on and not realizing the implications of what that action also entails.
Yeah, in relation to the story, because again, Lyle Conway comes across two maximal officers that essentially are arresting a maximal for just, like, staring too long, and then they start charging him for other crimes when he tries to resist, where the maximal says, like, oh, you can't do this. It's like, oh, I guess that's resisting duress. Adding more trouble, buddy.
Yeah. Couldn't they just charge him with loitering? I feel like that would have been
I think they start with, I don't know. I mean, it's clear they're being jerks.
Yeah. I just, like, I don't know if on Cybertron that's a crime or not, but I mean, here you can actually charge someone with loitering.
Mm-hmm. Except the guy's not even really loitering. They just thought he was looking at them funny.
Okay, he's staring at his own reflection too long. That you could classify that as loitering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, anyways, moving on to the next one. Put back up. So burning bridges. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what that is, basically you're destroying. You're getting rid of old ties before you actually, that could be helpful to you later on. Also, they take place with an actual bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So Stiletto is a max cop with PTSD. Because of her PTSD, she chose the assignment of guarding a bridge, which is the only way to get through what would otherwise be an impossible terrain. It would actually be strategically valuable to the resistance, which is why she and her partner Overshoot are told to guard it. Okay, I was just making sure I wrote down the right name because there's Overrun later on. So Overshoot, along with some overcharged drones. I hope people are able to keep those straight. So they eventually go time for them, and they actually need to defend the bridge. A lot of carnage ensues in the battle. Overshoot eventually just sets the drones to blow in order to accomplish their objective. I think he actually ends up taking out the bridge too. But Bighorn actually emerges from the explosion. But Overrun and Stiletto are not in any real shape to take him on. At one point, Stiletto gets knocked away, which she had PTSD and is having nightmares, but also they tried to memo surgery. They tried to mess with her memories to try to help her, which that would be controversial in the real world.
Yeah.
But turns out she's actually was implanted with fake memories. So the memory that she believes was her hesitating for a second, getting her partner killed, and the killer, like, getting away. But turns out, that's not what happened. Her partner had gone insane with murderous rage after, I think, being abducted to Nebulon. They didn't really cover that in a lot of detail in the summary, but she was ordered to kill him. So even what is a police officer is being taken advantage by the system too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she remembers what actually happened, kills Bighorn, and then tells Overshoot of her real memories to make sure that she remembers it too. Baboom. Baboom is sort of like yelling at Lyle Conway to try to get him to get revenge for Bighorn's death, but Lyle Conway says we don't have the resources to take revenge for one person, and they sort of just end up just reminiscing about Bighorn. And Stiletto wakes up from a nightmare, shaking, just having to deal with her problems, the stress, this traumatic stress that came from her real memories. But Overshoot is there to, like, by her side to help her through it. And that was pretty much that's all of Head Games. Or not Head Games, Burning Bridges.
Yeah. Yeah. Also of note that apparently she is a master of Metallicato.
Yes.
Which is the most dangerous of the Cybertronian martial arts.
You know what I noticed, actually? Every time it's mentioned that someone's a master of Metallicato,
yes.
It's a woman. It's a female Transformer. Except for, or Translist.
Well, I mean, the original one would be from Generation is Bludgeon, who's most well known for being a pretender with a zombie samurai shell. So, ironically, the toy did not come with a sword somehow.
Oh wait, the
you got to lead the Decepticons.
That reminds me. Quick sidebar. So in Forge the Fight, you now have the ability to get an entire Beast Wars team.
Ooh.
Yeah, so they just added Scorponok this month.
Mm.
So now you got Scorponok, Waspinator, Cheetor, Rhinox, Optimus Primal, Dinobot, and what's the other one? The Waspinator? There's six of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they also make a shout out to Memniosurgery, which is how Stiletto gets her thing, which obviously, if you're familiar with the IDW series, is it's what Chrome Dome does to, like, edit people's memories.
Chrome Dome might have been the one who did it.
No, according to this, it says it was done by Vampire.
Oh, I thought that was a typo.
No,
I was
that
so
is.
Confused. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. A member of the Predacon Secret Police. Seems like a fun dude.
I bet Tarantulas gets along with him well, but they're, like, comparing notes.
Uh-huh.
Wait.
Right.
Remember the Predacon Secret Police, like, did memo surgery on a member of the Maximal Security Forces?
Maybe? Wait. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, technically they're supposed to be working together against the Resistance.
Well, now, but this, I thought it happened before that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't see what the time frame for Burning Bridges was.
Maybe, like, officially the Maximals don't do that, so, like, well, we don't do that, but we know someone who does!
But it did mention that, like, it was known fact that she got memo surgery, and her coworkers were kind of looking at her different.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah.
Maybe the Peppercon Secret Police, like, as an organization, isn't actually secret. It's just what they do and who is part of it.
Yeah.
Like a CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So was microaggressions next? I thought it was something else before that. Oh, I think it was trigger warnings, and then. And then microaggressions.
Let's see. I mean, microaggressions is... no, microaggressions is listed next.
Oh, you're right, yeah. I was just... Okay. I was just remembering in the order that I read them.
Okay. So, microaggressions. So, long before the Uprising, Grimlock and Hot Rod downsized at the war's end. However, Grimlock illegally had his spark translate into a maximal protoform. and tried to kill the Builder Assembly. Hot Rod became a Micromaster, which those were Gen 1 toys that were like trying to cash in the Micro Machine market way back in the day. Which, in this course story, they're builders, so they're smaller and usually more mobile than builders, but not as mobile as Maximals.
Yeah, in Broken Windshields, like Lyle Convoy mentions that he's considered tall for a Maximal, and he's smaller than two Micromaster guards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyways, Hot Rod became a Micromaster, and he's trying to reform the system from within, and obviously neither of them sees eye to eye. Hot Rod gets sent on a mission, he gets fully fueled, which is something that's considered a very rarity in that society, because again, they're very low on energon to stop Grimlock, who has stolen the G-Virus. He broke into a thing and killed a bunch of guards, the exception of one guard named Coptor. Well, no, actually, I think he had a group of renegades from Gobots that are technically from another universe. Don't worry about too much of that part. That ties into the Transformers Club kind of multiverse stuff. Anyways, so he is planning on exposing the virus during the next big games.
Since I read the synopsis for that one, I think it was the Gobots like broke in and stole the virus, put the word out, right. And Grimlock was just their buyer.
Right.
Yeah. Like he didn't hire them to do it or anything.
Yeah. Anyways, Grimlock wants to deploy the G-Virus at the game because Counselor Ratbat, who is one of the heads of the Builder Council, is a general terrible being. Like, if you're not familiar with Ratbat from, like, the Gen 1 comics, just know that he is a jerk and a major politician and was a leader of the Decepticons for one point, even though he has a tape. Anyways, so on the way to the arena, Grimlock's team gets ambushed and eventually gets it down to himself and the Predacon Snapper. Snapper is ready to deploy the virus when Hot Rod reveals what the virus is, the remains of the mad tyrant Galvatron after his vivisection. And the virus will turn everything it touches into Galvatron replicas. Grimlock knew this, but still wanted to deploy the virus to terrorize the assembly. But while any builders affected this are going to be stuck in place, it will also affect the Maximals and Predacons in the audience. So you'll just have a horde of Galvatron replicas running around. So Snapper defies Grimlock, destroys the virus, and surrenders to Hot Rod. Well, Grimlock swears that he'll hang Snapper for this. Meanwhile, we cut back to the Micropolis infirmary, and a guard who was injured during the attack succumbs to the virus and turns into a Galvatron replica, killing the nurse, and then drives off into the unknown.
I wonder if we'll actually see him again, because I honestly don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. We haven't gotten to the ending, and technically they had more stories planned, but obviously they had to stop when the Transformers Collector Club lost the Transformers license. Yeah. So we'll honestly find out when you do, dear audience. Also, not surprisingly, the G-Virus is a call-out to Resident Evil's T-Virus, or even its G-Virus. Its G does not stand for Galvatron, though.
Oh, if only.
Mm-hmm.
You know what would be awesome? If this turned him into Beast Wars 2 Galvatron, that'd be cool.
I think the design is based on Beast Wars 2 Galvatron. I don't think it knows the same character.
Okay.
We didn't really go over this, where there's a very strict naming convention where about name reuse, where anyone who has like a character has the same name as another character has their names like slightly spelled differently. Some characters got combined or just had names changed entirely. There are three exceptions for like where a name is intentionally reused. This Galvatron is one of them because he is supposed to be a reincarnation of the original Galvatron. And we'll get to the other two in other stories.
So actually, looks like there's some... in this story, there was some trivia about the Human Confederation. It was written in Cybertronic. So it's actually data... the Grimlock actually paid off the Gobots with all the data that the Resistance had on the Human Federation, and the Cybertronics that are line breaks in the story actually is the data. Humans, or at least Transformers talking about them, stopped using BC, BCE, and ADCE, instead using BA for ARC, as in pre-1984, and SCA, Stellar Cycle of the ARC, 1984 and onward. Humans developed the first AI in 1SDA, referring to Torque 3 from Generation 1 cartoon Day of the Machines, landed on Mars in 8SCA, constructed the first warp gate with the Autobots in 13SDA, referring to the creation of the Trigger from Battle of the Stargate manga. The AI and AI became ubiquitous by 30SDA, that'd be 2004, 30 years after 84? 2014, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So 2014, just to make it easier on the listeners. So whoever wrote the section was nice enough to give me the actual date. So in 85, the humans built the first AI in 85, went to Mars in 92, got the first warp gate in 97. AI is ubiquitous by 2014, with neural interfaces by 2017. Earth Defense Command, founded in 2003, was formed out of G.I. Joe Star Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
2003, referring to the EDC founding date given to Given and Kiss players.
Yeah, which, as a reminder, do not Google Transformers Kiss players.
Why can we not escape it?
Uh-huh.
Okay, in 33, that would be 2017. Yep. In 2017, the Earth Defense Command declared all of human space off limits to Transformers due to an attack on New Earth. And let's see, 39, that'd be 2023. The human singularity happened. Earth Tech was surpassing Cybertronian. After the Decepticons attacked human colony Jing Shanghai in 39, that'd be 2023, using a captured Autobot shuttle, the humans blew up a real Autobot shuttle, the Star Arrow, which was approaching Tamil Dunia for aid in 42. Would be 2026. Humanity formed the Human Confederacy in 45, and the Earth Defense Command became the Confederated Terran Colonial Fleet. The scouring of Nebulos 2 years later caused the nascent Confederacy to impose an armistice on the Transformers and forcibly limit them to Cybertron and 9 existing colony worlds. Galvatron responded by launching a massive invasion fleet in 49, and the humans vaped it. Oh, that's a way different meeting in 2018.
Yeah.
told the Transformers they could only have 4 colonies now, and sterilized the disbarred 5 worlds after a 10-day piss-off grace period. After a 10-day piss-off grace period. the humans somehow conquered death in 70 SCA. Oh, remember, this is the craziest part I've been telling you about.
Yeah.
Split into 3 branches of biologicals, circuitry enhanced and cycles by 80 to 90. SCA unaugmented humans were second class citizens now. Really? In 130, after the arc, started bringing back every dead human from history with the, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Eutychus Project?
Yeah.
Yeah. Jim Sorensen clarified that a bit of the final sentence cut off from the final story. The Tychus Project excluded those considered heinous criminals, such as the Witwicky family.
Uh-huh.
I guess they would be collaborators in this case.
Yeah. Yeah. This bit actually comes up in the regarding of intersectionality, where we get a brief prologue on a human ship, which features Blix, Una, and who's the last one?
Chalk.
Yeah, Chalk from Beast Wars. Yes. The Neanderthals / proto-humans are now like essentially like Star Trek people.
Yeah.
Like, I believe the art for the Human Confederacy included is art from the story where they are very clearly in Star Trek-inspired uniforms.
Which one is it again? Is it, where's...
It's on the article for... the story is intersectionality.
Okay.
But the art is on the page for the Human Confederacy.
Oh, okay. I didn't
I just sent you the link.
Confederacy... Oh, those three, yeah.
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 But yeah, that is, like, even I can tell that is Star Trek as heck.
Oh, yeah, no, he, like, Blix is wearing a Klingon belt like Worf does all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way they drew him, though.
Mm-hmm.
These actually do look like the Star Trek comic.
Yeah.
Very similar style.
It was probably not an accident. Or coincidence, rather.
Do you want to know what the population of the Confederacy is?
What?
500 trillion.
That is nuts. But then, like, they also can expand throughout space, so probably not all on Earth.
Oh, yeah. They can expand throughout space, plus, remember, they're conquered death, so they're bringing back every humanoid, anthropod, like, I don't know at what point they stopped, right? Like, when do you stop? When do you draw the line?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. 40% were sentient, I guess.
Yeah.
But the guy who got down from the tree and started walking, that's who you stop at.
Yeah.
alright, so I guess we should move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm. We kind of skipped over the actual story of intersectionality.
Oh, yeah, no, I meant the intersectionality.
Okay, yeah.
What happened?
Let's see, so this one I didn't like. That one got complicated in little parts, but it focuses on the crewmates of the starship Dinosaur, the only warship the Cybertron is allowed to have at this point, which has which is also like kind of a further example of how it divides society, where the general crew members are Predacons, but all the officers are Maximals. I noticed based off heavily off of the cast of Beast Wars Neo.
Well, quick question. All right, so if Cybertron is basically supposed to be Ferguson, who would the Human Confederacy be? Federal government?
Kind of. I mean, like it's not an exact like. The Ferguson comparison is more of like having to deal with the uprising on Cybertron this and then how. The planet is being like the relationship of the Human Confederacy versus. Although I can kind of the Cybertronians, so I can kind of see that as well, just because they're like being contained, because they're seen as inherently violent.
Oh wow, yeah, yeah, that doesn't look good in 2018 either.
No.
I'm gonna say okay, just for my own headcanon. Human Confederacy is Canada. Or the Commonwealth of Nations.
Okay. I'll accept that.
Yeah. Oh, right. I forgot. Like, hey, all of our Canadian listeners, you guys are the Human Confederacy. You have conquered death. Good job.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, that actually worked, though. Universal healthcare.
Yes.
Let us expand beyond our borders, Canada. Oh my god, the analogy works even better now. because Canada went west and like formed as a response to westward expansion in the U.S. They were worried they're going to try to take the, like surround them, so they kept going west too.
Mm-hmm.
What? Gary Chalk can actually be Blick.
Okay.
Okay, I'll stop.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, the crew members, they find out about two fugitives, Protoform X and Transmutate, And I'm going to leave the rest of you because I didn't get a chance to get through the entirety of the summary on this one.
I didn't read the summary for intersectionality.
I thought you'd... Ah, crap.
Yeah, it's a... They're trying to... You guys know this story.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, like, they're on a spaceship. There's two fugitives who show up. They probably get pulled into the gravity well of a black hole at some point, and then they all have to work together to get out of it. There you go.
Yeah. Sorry, this is one of the longer ones, so it's actually got a hard time to go through it. But yeah, they're...
I mentioned this off mic. Intersectionality has a lot of sections. It's actually five parts on the wiki, including an epilogue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like we're trying to just cover the major beats of the uprising.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess we can just move on to trigger warnings then.
Mm-hmm.
So Maximo Cobb, Wolfgang investigates a murder that takes them all across Iacon. This one's a crime noir. Ultimately, the major stuff having to do with the resistance or the uprising is that. So at some point before the Pax Cybertronia, the target masters were all extribute. What was the actual word they used? I think they were like taken out or something.
Extracted,
something like that. Hold on.
Exterminated?
No, we weren't exterminated. I know it's not that one.
Mm-hmm.
Trigger warnings. Let's see, the target master. This was a really long one, too. I did manage. Okay. Extirpation?
Extirpation?
Let me just read. Okay. After following the end of the Great War, the target masters were seemingly granted amnesty and exile, only to be wiped out in a systematic target master extirpation, which I think they basically made them think.
Yeah, an extirpation is a local extinction.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, no. So, verb. Root out and destroy completely. Yeah, so they were exterminated.
Yeah.
So you could, I guess they don't want to name it that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a scientific term for it.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So, you were probably looking at the noun. I looked at the verb.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Oh, yeah, local extinction. That's what's okay, yeah, so local extinction. So, oh god, they were rounded up. Checked out.
Mm-hmm.
Wolfgang has to investigate a murder. She seems to be a builder. What was her name? Twist? Mm-hmm. But the thing is, the builders have a tendency to, quote, take care of their own, which means no Maximal or Predacon criminal is going to take out a builder because there's going to be consequences for that.
Mm-hmm.
So either is the resistance that took her out, or it was, or is a builder. And if it was a builder, they're not going to want it investigated.
Mm-hmm.
But his boss, Aura, kind of just tells him, like, so we're on our own. But if the order comes down that we need to stop investigating, we need to stop investigating. He goes in, goes into this one bar to question some people. There's really just three people he can talk about. One of them is the bartender, named Montrock. Is that name right? Mm-hmm. Ring a bell to you? I think he was a... Oh, something like that. Montrock. And then someone who introduces herself as Venus later. And then the third guy who he realized was watching him and he knew he was going to get jumped. But he actually got jumped from the roof, which the guy was smart.
Mm-hmm.
He got jumped down on, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Venus.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I was looking at Monzo and like see he was a Nebulan, which makes sense why he is a target master.
Okay.
I guess I should explain what a Nebulan is.
Yeah.
So in Gen 1 continuity... I'm assuming this bar was heavily from the Marvel Comics one, where a bunch of a bunch of Autobots and Decepticons left Cybertron and ended up landing on the planet Nebulon. And the Autobots, in order to prove that they meant the Nebulons no harm, removed their heads. As you do.
Sure.
So the Nebulons bonded with their heads. I think they use the term binary bonded. So with the Headmaster, their person, their head is a person, and then that expanded to Target Masters, who had people that could become guns, or Power Masters, where you had people that could become engine blocks. That one's a little fuzzier.
I just learned about Overlord thanks to Chris McFeely, so like I guess that probably ties into that too.
Yeah, Overlord is a Power Master.
Yeah.
Technically a double Power Master. Yeah, I think the only one.
Yeah, Giga and... What's the other guy's name? Mega? Yeah. Mega, yeah. And Giga. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately what it turns out, Twist is actually a Target Master. I've been a Headmaster, actually, because I believe she's actually an Autobot.
She is a Target Master.
She's a Target Master. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. I forgot who the guy that tried to jump him was. What's his name? His assumed name.
Mm-hmm.
Overrun. He called himself Overrun. Later, he turns out it's actually Surge. He's the one who actually killed Twist because she was a little too public. They were both in hiding. He was worried that she was going to expose them.
Mm-hmm.
So he killed her. And also, guess who Venus was?
Black Arachnia?
Yeah, Black Arachnia. She also she introduced herself to Wolfgang as Venus. To everyone else, she was calling herself Alita. Mm-hmm. Which is an homage to her animated continuity version. Yeah, so also Wolfgang's actually a double agent. I said he's a Max cop, but he's a plant by the Predacon secret police. Actually, he gets mad at Black. He yells at Black Rackney at one point for basically like doing any trick to get what they want. While he's playing good soldier for two sides, and he says like, and he really all he cares about is Icon. He says like, whatever side you're on, when the resistance reaches Iacon, whatever side you're on, I know I'm the one. I know it's gonna be the one I'm fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, not sure if we mentioned it, but Uprising kind of focuses on the psychological aspects of the Uprising.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, rather than just like the main battles of how it's changing Cybertron. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really all of Trigger Warnings.
Okay. And this brings us to, I believe, the last one we're talking on this episode.
I forgot to mention. So it wouldn't be a true crime noir if Wolfgang didn't bleed out as the cops are coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how it ends. So go ahead.
Okay, so the last one is Identity Politics. This one actually takes place before the Uprising.
Hmm.
Since the Uprising, there's no talk of the Uprising happening during the story. So the main action takes place at a dynamic Energon distillery where Scorponok, a nervous programmer, accidentally stops two Maximals from committing a robbery, gets compliments from the planet's minister, a large, bombastic, and purple Predacon named Nash Teeth. Certainly does not... completely original character.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is in charge of the plant, but things are changing, where the administrator is the builder Double Punch, and he has an opportunity to move up to the builder's assembly council, which will leave his position vacant. However, he tells Nash Chief he can't promote him because no builder would respect a Predacon, and someone else would be in charge. And Nash is worried that in the changeover he could lose the status he's managed to get. So Nash decides to prove his wealth to the builders by improving efficiency at the plant, where Scorponok mentioned he had some plans. Unfortunately, to implementing them would require a lot of testing, and he wants to improve efficiency now. So if he mentions that he's making improvements, he'll have to go into testing. But if they implement it secretly and they improve it too much, he's going to have to explain it. So Scorponok offhandedly makes a suggestion of just selling off the surplus, which they start doing on the streets. Initially running into some problems, as Nash is not familiar dealing with criminal elements, getting ripped off, and then eventually running afoul of a local game called the Copsegos, led by a Predacon named Thunderhoof. During a meeting, his gang beats up Nash and Scorponok. And in response, Nash threatens to hang Thunderhoof's head from the spires of Iacon, which one of Thunderhoof's goons, Pterosaur, mockingly calls him Megatron. Thunderhoof blows off Megatron's leg and basically tells him to kind of know his place and stop trying to double cross him. So Scorponok takes Nash back to the DED plant, where he's lost control. He's been replaced by an underling, and things are going bad. And Scorponok says, like, why don't they just like take the Energon and skip town? But Nash refuses and has greater ambitions after all this. So this leads to an elaborate revenge plan where Nash, like, kills Double Punch and frames the Cosbagios gang for it, also stealing all of his antique firearms as well for himself, then triggers a meltdown at the plant to cover the Energon theft. And then finally, after, like, weeks afterward, the Cosbagios gang is, like, under a lot of heat because they've been framed for this murder. Nash calls a meeting with him, and then basically double crosses him by revealing he's bought out Thunderhoof's minions, who shoot him down. So now Nash is in control of this gang, which rebrands itself as the Darksiders and rechristens himself as Megatron.
Thunderhoof. Is Thunderhoof the yellow guy, like, laying there dying?
In the art, no. Like, I don't think so. Thunderhoof is based on the guy with the antlers from Robots in Disguise.
Yeah, I saw him. I didn't realize he would... I thought the guy with the antlers would be based on this Thunderhoof or some variation of him.
Yeah, well, like, the Robots in Disguise character came first.
Oh, okay. You know that guy that actually... That character is actually played by, what's his name? Sylvester Stallone's uncle? Frank?
I did not realize that.
Yeah. Frank Stallone.
No, the dead one from the art is Impound.
Okay.
Who was a Predacon who was trying to stop the meltdown and be a hero, and Scorponok had to kill him in order to keep things going on. There was a lot of intrigue, but like it's all the scenario is very based. According to Jim Sorensen, the only aspects of the plot is kind of based off of Breaking Bad, where you have Megatron as Walter White, who is, you know, novice criminal trying to make his way in the world, and like eventually just becoming bigger and nastier to like match the stakes. Mm. And Scorponok in the role of Jesse Pinkman, which is probably actually the more characterization Scorponok has got than like in the actual show.
Yeah. Oh, and I double checked. Okay, so that's actually Frank Stallone's actually Sly's younger brother.
That actually makes more sense.
Yeah, I thought he was his uncle. I was like, because I forgot Sly Stallone's like in his 60s now.
Yeah. So as mentioned, like there are three characters that throw off the naming convention. Galvatron, and you have Megatron, and I don't know if that happened in the story that we kind of glazed over. Protoformer X will take the name Rampage because he doesn't care about like society niceties.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the main story. Now, it is not all of it. There is a separate multi-part finale, which we're going to do in a separate episode because we've been talking for over an hour.
Yeah,
this is why we didn't want to try to do these ones individually.
To be honest, like when we were at like the 25 minute mark, I'm just like, wow, I didn't think we'd get through this much so quickly. I'm surprised we were able to fit this in an hour.
Yeah. So we'll probably cover that separately. the finale and some of the side pieces. Like, there's also there's a bunch of other, like, text pieces that are part of it. That kind of epilogue, and probably talk about a bit about Change in Agenda and how that's decided, like, part of the canon, but also very much not canon for the story.
Yeah. Alright, let's see, I just, we want to just make sure that we talk about this. Okay, so we've got a message from the Golden Disc, a very good one. Put an email, actually a Canadian listener. Let me pull it up here. Okay, yeah. Do you want me to read it?
Yes.
Okay. So it's from Kimberly. Hey, James and Daoud. Just writing to thank you guys for a great podcast, and this wouldn't fit in the tweet. And the fact that this would be a message from the Golden Disc is also a plus. Yep, it is. Your podcast has helped me rekindle my love of Beast Wars, and I'm really looking forward to your comments on Beast Machines, a series I never got into, and what I do know I don't get. We'll definitely help you there, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
really appreciated the What's Up Vox segment. Very clever, by the way. That's all, James.
Thank you.
In season 3...
I was very proud of that one.
Season 3, episode 11, which, as of this recording... Sorry, guys, it's the last one I've got out. It really helped make me make unfinished biz and possibilities clearer. Concerning Tigerhawk, when he arrives and is captured by tarantulas, did you notice that he already has a Machmal symbol on his chest? Spoilers, viewers, he joins them.
Ah.
Which I'm going to just chalk that up to them not being able to make two models of him.
Yeah, and also it's a good thing. Like, otherwise you... Yeah, probably should have just put a Vox symbol on him, but... Whoops!
I mean, what would a Vox symbol look like? Is there one?
I want to say yes, but I don't know if that's one that exists for the show, or whether that was come up in retrospect.
Probably retrospect. I think I've seen it. And since we really only see and hear Tigertron in Tigerhawk and no Airazor, what traits of her would you guys have brought forward so we know she's a part of him too? I think she means personality traits.
Yeah.
So basically pick and choosing Ares' best traits.
Uh-huh.
Give him more of a connection with Cheetor, how about that?
Yeah. Give him more of a sense of like humor, because like Ares was a bit more snarky and like kind of made a nice contrast to Tigerhawk, who was very like nature. I know that's a bad story of him.
Oh, you know,
you get the idea.
Question makes me miss Airazor. She should have been in the show more, first of all.
Yeah, she kind of gets robbed.
Yeah. I realize that, you know, when you're a kid, time seems so much longer. But maybe it's just because we were watching it like one episode a week, and this show was very much in reruns a lot of the time. I remember Airazor being a bigger part of the show.
You know what? I just realized Airazor's personality reminds me, and like, if I got a chance, you know, if you know, in a theoretical like Beast Wars, what it reminds me of, and even like her, to an extent, including her relation with Tigertron, she reminds me of Hawk Girl from the Justice League cartoon.
Oh yeah, I can see that.
Hmm.
And
not just because, you know, obviously both are Hawk.
Yeah, she's a Hawk Girl. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, she's right. Tigertron and John. Yeah. Stewart are both a little stoic.
Yeah. And she's snarky and like kind of thinks that there's sticks in the mud.
Yeah. Oh, I remember this episode of Unlimited. She's going out to dinner and he just sees her in the elevator, takes a second and just says like, Judas Priest! I'm like, yeah, that's the right reaction. That dress, yeah.
I also like the Christmas episode. Where she takes him out for her idea of Christmas and involves like going to a bar and starting a fight.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Where Martian Manhunter spends Christmas with the Kents. That was awesome.
Yeah,
yeah. Let's see what else could we put in for make part of Tigerhawk.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, do you think it would have been possible to do the two voices thing?
I think you could have done it. I mean, I almost wonder if, like, they even considered it, but just because of, like, scheduling and stuff, like, maybe, like, Airazor's voice actress wasn't available to, like, come back and record, but Boo Mankuma was, because, like, he had, you know, done a couple other voices, too.
He was one of the Vonk in that episode, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because they already had him, and they didn't want him to the Vonk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought of something really funny. What if they had Doug Parker do it, because he's already just directing the thing? The short answer to your question, Kimberly, is that Eraser wasn't around enough for us to like put her trace in the Tiger Hawk. Unfortunately,
No. She was asking if couldn't. Like, yeah, I think like giving like some of her like her snarl.
Yeah.
I think that would be the best thing to bring up.
Yeah. So it's signed, thanks again for a cool podcast. The Kimberly, a.k.a. Kimby, @furball_24, a Canadian listener.
Aw. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that... I may or may not print that and frame it. No, because, like, this email makes me feel like we're doing, like, a legit podcast, and not just, our tiny little corner of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Seriously, heartfelt, thank you.
Top Thursday.
Shut up. So I think that's it, right?
Yeah.
Alright, so next episode we're gonna just finish up Beast Wars Uprising. That'll be five parts we gotta cover.
Yes.
All right.
With that, maybe some shout outs for like some of the extra material.
Yeah.
But
anything else before I get to closing?
No, I think that's all.
Okay. Alright, so thank you for listening to the Axon Archives. If you have any questions, want to guest on the show, or want to talk to us about Beast Wars, Beast Machines, or anything in between. Didn't mean to rhyme. But you can reach us on Twitter @AxonArchives or by email axonarchives@gmail.com. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Podcasts, Podknife, Podbean, Podchaser, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. Please leave a rating and a review because it helps people find the show. Our website or our episodes are hosted at axon.buzzsprout.com. If you're someone who doesn't like to listen to through podcatchers or wants to just grab the RSS feed from there. If you want to follow either of us individually on Twitter, I'm @DowFact.
I'm @Discord_Inc.
Until next time, the uprising continues.
Oh, I was going to say Beast or Bot were still the baddest, but I don't even know that fits with this.
Yeah, oh wait, no, the other sign-off we had, I completely forgot that we had written down was, what's going on Cybertron? see you guys next, or listen to us next week, I guess. I was going to say see you guys. Bye.
Bye.